Thank you so much for tuning in to Grieving Voices. I'm very excited to bring a guest. We haven't had a guest in a little while here on the podcast. And today, Alexandra Cole is joining me. She's a former corporate consultant turned human design coach. After a decade of helping Fortune 500s identify and articulate their why, she pivoted to help individuals, families, and couples do the same. She uses human design as a tool to help her clients pursue their purpose with more clarity and confidence. Alexandra is passionate about translating insights from her clients' human design charts into actionable strategies for optimizing their relationships, well-being, careers, finances, and family life. She was born in London, raised in Amsterdam, educated at Princeton University, and now lives in Santa Barbara, California with her husband and two-year-old son. Becoming a mother inspired her to create Thriving by Design, a collection of tools, cheat sheets, and online courses designed to give parents insight into their child's unique sensitivities, preferences, and gifts, as well as tactical tips for how to support them. Alexandra is happiest when moving her body, eating good food, exploring new places, and in deep conversation with new or old friends. I love that. I love deep conversation too. And I love human design. And I honestly can't even remember how I got into your sphere, but I did. And you share the same name as my middle, Alexandra. I love the name. Aww. Beautiful name. But there was something I found interesting when I was looking into, I don't know, I opened an email and then you get down a rabbit hole and then I found your wellness, the wellness design report or well by design report. And that's how we kind of connected. And I'm just thinking like, gosh, this would be a really good topic to bring on the podcast for people, especially particularly grievers who, you know, sometimes you just don't know what you need. And this well by design report can be a good place to start. Like if I just want to feel better, how can I feel better? That is aligned with who I am and how I was created and how I was made. Right. Mm. And I absolutely love also the idea of arming parents with information and knowledge to help them be, let's see, what's the word I want to use? A more aligned parent for their child. Like yeah, based on 100%. Their child's design, right? Because mm-hmm. if my youngest is 15, if I would have known what I know now about human design, about my own design, about my kids, all three of them are manifesting generators. I'm a manifester. Like I was exhausted, like motherhood, like totally exhausted me to the point where like you can question like, oh my God, what did I sign up for?
I can only imagine. I have one little manifesting generator and that's already a lot. I can't imagine having three of them running around.
And they're all like the first two are 18 months apart. And the, you know, wow. Yeah, I had three under five years. So
that's impressive, especially as a manifester. That is incredibly impressive. And I mean, I would also say too, from a grief perspective, I think both of us lost a parent very young in life. And if I had understood my design better, or if God forbid anything like that ever happens in my immediate family, having human design as a tool to just better understand a child's emotional world and how they're designed to navigate these types of major traumas and just life-changing events, especially when it comes to kind of your environment and how that shifts, it allows you to show up in a much more kind of supportive way for that child because you know exactly kind of what their patterning is and how to align with that and support that in how you are tending to them and caring for them.
I really want to get to your story and how you got to where you are with human design and how this all came to be. And so would you please take us back in time and to that loss and how, like what transpired in the in-between?
Oh man, that loss was early on and probably well before obviously human design even was at all in my kind of frame of reference, but I lost my mom to breast cancer at age 10. I'm the oldest of three kids. And at the time we were living in the Netherlands. And my dad did an incredible job of kind of stepping in and trying to play mom and dad. We were surrounded by an incredible support system. So all things considered, I look back and can only feel grateful in a way for having experienced it in the way that I did. But nonetheless, right, at 10 years old, experiencing such a huge loss, especially as the eldest child, I think forced me to grow up very, very quickly and forced me to kind of grapple with some of these like bigger life questions a lot earlier on than the average 10-year-old, let's say. So I think I was quite a mature teenager in terms of my life experience, but also kind of like my way of connecting and understanding others. And especially when it came to my emotional world, I was very aware of all the emotions I was feeling. I just didn't necessarily feel like it was appropriate for me to express those anymore because I wanted to be strong for my family. So for a good 8 years, I shut down my own kind of emotional response and probably a huge part of that grieving process. Until fast forward at 18, I moved from the Netherlands to the United States. And my mom had actually studied in the United States. So it was kind of a little bit of like following in her footsteps. And I get here, and within the first year, I fall madly in love with this American man. And it was the first time since losing my mom that I had this huge fear of losing this individual and the impact that that might have. And it kind of actually opened the door for me to experience grief because I was, one, I think far enough removed from my family where I felt like I could do that. And two, I had this trigger of someone I cared so deeply about, and the thought of losing him was like such a kind of visceral, like the pain was like so great associated with that, that I allowed myself to finally grieve. And I think I cried. Like, basically, I made up for those 8 years of not shedding a tear. And this poor man who I'm now married to, so I can say this, like, he was incredible, but he probably didn't understand everything that I was kind of processing and going through at the moment itself. Anyway, fast forward a few years, I graduated college and picked the path of least resistance in the sense that I very much went down the road that I felt like everyone expected me to, and that I felt pressured to in a way, which was a very kind of corporate path in management consulting. And I kind of had most of my life planned out. I was a very kind of a logical, rational thinker when it came to kind of where I thought I was heading. And maybe that was also part of all of those years of kind of shutting down that emotional world, even though my emotions, especially according to human design, are my most trustworthy inner compass. I just wasn't listening to them. A few years into that career, a friend of mine asked me to help her brainstorm a new business idea that she had. And I would meet with her before work. I would meet with her after work. And I was doing 12 to 16 hour days. So this was like a commitment to meet with her. But I became so passionate about what it was that she was working on to the point that she eventually asked me to leave my job and co-found this company with her. And I think I thought about it for maybe a few days and felt this full body just yes in response to it. It was a complete conviction that this was what I was meant to do. And it came from this place of genuine excitement and passion. And it was such a departure from how I had lived my life before, which was very much kind of like mind oriented, that the fact, and I did, I ended up leaving my job, starting this company with her, and we had no clients, we had no track record, we had no funding, we had no experience, nothing. We made it all work, but it was a few months after that I reflected on this leap and how I was able to make it with so much confidence and conviction, when really there was, you know, no logical reason to do so. And it set me on this path of self-development, trying to better understand what that was inside of me and why I finally allowed that to make the decision instead of the kind of rational brain. And that's what ultimately led me to discover human design, which told me like, hey, listen, you're actually here to listen to your gut, to listen to your emotions. And the more I started leaning into that, the more myself I felt. Like I realized that for those past like 10, 12 years, I had been kind of trying again to live up to this expectation that I thought other people had of me, of who I needed to be for them in that moment, and had lost the essence of who I was along the way. And so that's really what human design allowed me to do. And after several years of just kind of using it to heal myself and to allow myself to grieve in many ways, I started using it with other people, friends and family at first. And so over the course of a few years, it kind of blossomed into this side hustle and then something more than a side hustle. And now here I am working with clients every day, helping them better understand, you know, the most aligned use of their energy and how to become a more authentic version of themselves.
I'm curious too, for you, I'm sure I already know the answer, but what human design has helped me too is to better understand the environment in which I lived with the people that I shared it with, right? So for instance, especially a parent, you know, if you don't have their exact details, you know, birthplace and things like that, it can be a little difficult. But what did that give you when you started to learn more about human design? And for being so young and losing your mother, did it help you to really get to know her in a way that you couldn't because she had passed, you know, through her human design?
Such a good question. Yes, it did really help me with that. And also, it helped me see certain parts of myself that I share with her, right? And also understand why certain aspects of her are so memorable to me, and other parts, you know, it's hard for you to understand unless someone else kind of tells a story and you're like, oh, right, I guess she was like that too. One thing that human design really helped me understand, though, is the fact that, so my dad is also he's an emotional manifesting generator, and my brother and sister are non-emotionals. And so for people who aren't familiar with human design, what this means is that both my dad and I experience the world first and foremost through our own emotional lens. Like, we have this inherent emotional bias about how we are experiencing everything around us. And we feel our own emotions first and foremost, and they're very much supposed to inform how we operate. My brother and sister, they feel other people's emotions first and foremost. So their kind of experience of the world is more shaped by other people's emotions, and they sometimes have a harder time distinguishing where they end and where someone else begins. And I think if you think about our kind of family unit, obviously my dad is going through an insurmountable amount of grief and was making a concerted effort to actually share that grief with us, right? He took the approach of, I want to be open with my kids. I want to talk about how sad I am, right? And so he did that. But because both my brother and sister are open emotionals, they were incredibly sensitive to that. So they picked up on everything and then started kind of absorbing it and carrying that weight. And I think as a 10-year-old, I intuitively saw that and decided, you know, there's no space for another emotional in this family, right? Like, I can't do that same thing. So I'm just going to kind of like shut mine down so that my dad can have that space and we can kind of all absorb, or at least maybe even with my siblings, like, I'm going to try and shield them from my dad's emotions, right? Instead of add to that kind of like fire hose effect. Recognizing that and the role that that made forced me to play has been really helpful, not just in kind of making sense of kind of my journey, but also making sense in my relationship with my dad and why certain things that he does trigger me so much, right? And so I think those, that especially in these past kind of 5 years and becoming a mom, I've reflected on this a lot, and human design has definitely been invaluable in that process.
And how has that shaped how you parent your son?
So my son is also an emotional, and my husband is a non-emotional. So I think just knowing what I know about human design, the biggest takeaway here is that kids, a lot of it is nature, right? They come into this world with a certain set of patterns and behaviors and sensitivities. And as parents, there's this tendency to want to kind of manage and control that. And we think that we're protecting them in a way, right? We think we're setting them up for success. But really, what I've learned is that the best thing you can do as a parent is kind of do less, like step back and allow them to kind of grow into that little human they're designed to be. And having their human design chart makes that much easier, because you can kind of see, oh, wait, actually, they're living their design, because especially when who they're designed to be might be different from you or opposite from you in terms of how their emotions work or how they're designed to communicate or make decisions, right? We only know what we know. And we look at the world again through that kind of like biased lens. And so when you're raising a child, it's really hard to let go of that. And human design has allowed me to do that. So for example, when my son has an emotional reaction to something, and he's a very emotional child, because his first reaction is always going to be this like big emotional outburst. My husband's response to that typically is, you're okay, you're okay, you're okay. There's no need to cry, no tears, no tears, right? Like that's just because he is non-emotional, so he doesn't understand the significance of allowing yourself to kind of feel those feelings. I, on the other hand, and now I've also, you know, not trained, but coached my husband to respond in a similar way. I will just give my son a big hug and say, let it out. Let's ride this emotional wave together, right? Like, tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what happened, right? And I don't ever try to shut that down, because I know that this, if I start to kind of manipulate his emotional experience, he is going to lose. It's like losing a limb, right, for him, because it's such an important way of how he is designed to make sense of the world. And if he doesn't feel like he can trust it, or he feels like it's wrong to respond emotionally, he's going to do what I did for 8 years and pay the price. So that's just one small example of how I'm using this as a parent.
And when it comes to grief, that is a massively important example. Massively.
Yes.
And if your child is a manifester, good luck to you. Oh,
I know.
You know, I've learned, like, I was probably just some sort of enigma to my mother. Like, but you know what? I learned that my mother is a projector.
Mm.
Which I was like, whoa, that makes sense.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. And that's one of the things that I love about human design, is it does give you, it allows you to see other people in a much more objective way, where you can start to understand, oh, this is why I must have been so challenging for my mom, right? And it doesn't excuse any behavior. It just gives you a different lens through which to kind of witness and observe and see the things that happened. Because yeah, as a manifester, right, part of what you're here to do is to trigger people, like, in a way, right? Like, you are here to challenge people. And sometimes that can feel really uncomfortable. And if as a parent, you're not cut out for that, or you don't know how to handle that, and you're not aware of where that's coming from, it can be really challenging. And she would just have wanted to kind of shut your manifesting tendencies down, right? Or in an effort to protect you, she's like, you can't be this big. I need to limit this person. I need to kind of, like, you know, encourage them to control it. Exactly. Exactly. When really what a manifestor kid needs to be able to do is, like, do their thing and with complete freedom, throw a tantrum, right? Like, let it out, get angry and move on. But if you tell them like, you can't do that, that's not appropriate, that manifestor is going to grow up to be a shell of who they actually could be. Because again, they don't trust any of those like inner voices that are communicating to them constantly or trying to.
Amen to that, I can tell you wholeheartedly. Because I first discovered human design like a little over a year ago.
Wow.
So it has been like, yeah.
Yeah.
Mind blowing. So since we're on this topic, can you quickly do a rundown of like the child? You describe the child manifestor, because that's what I am. But can you quickly just kind of describe the other types, energy types,
yeah,
as children for people who are listening who may feel like there's, I think this can help with conflict within parent-child dynamics. So I think I'm glad the conversation went here. So
absolutely. And as I describe it too, this also applies to adults and to inner children. Like a lot of the time when I talk about, when I, you know, share content through that parenting lens, I get responses from people that say, you know, this helped me so much to heal my inner child and trauma that I experienced as a kid, just understanding what that like little version of me must have been experiencing in that moment. So there's five energy types, and just kind of at a very high level, this whole system, human design, essentially it's based on your birth time, date, and place, and the energetic frequency that was present in the exact moment you took your first breath. And you want to imagine it's like you were imprinted with this energetic frequency. And the chart itself is like that, like blueprint to how your energy is designed to operate in the most authentic and the most effortless way, right? Like when you are listening to that blueprint and operating in alignment with it, there's this element of flow to life where you're still going to encounter challenging situations, but you'll move through them with a sense of confidence and conviction and trust in your own kind of inner authority to be able to overcome those things. So the foundation of this system is something that we call an energy type. And I often describe it as like the outer layer of the onion, where there are so many more nuanced layers to the system that get into an incredible amount of detail in terms of, you know, how you're designed to eat, the types of environments that are most supportive for you, how you're designed to communicate and emote and all those things. But the first piece to understand is your energy type. There's five different energy types, and each type has a slightly different way of investing energy in order to get the greatest return on that investment in terms of fulfillment and purpose and reward. So we talked about the manifestor and the manifestor little kid. Manifestors, their energy is designed to be quite extreme in terms of highs and lows. Like they'll have these like huge creative emotional bursts where literally they can go for days on this like energetic high, and then it'll come crashing down and they will need to rest, reset, recharge. But ultimately that's because manifestors' role in this world is to initiate, to create things, to challenge that status quo and initiate newness and novelty. And so you need a lot of like powerful energy to do that. And you also need to not give a damn about everyone else around you. And that's that triggering piece that I was talking about. And that's why when you meet a little manifestor kid, they're just off doing their thing, right? Like they get this urge, they need to, you know, dig a hole in the garden, and they just grab the shovel and they just start digging, right? They're not here to ask for permission. They're not here to look for validation. They're just here to follow those urges and convictions. And as a parent, again, that can be really triggering because we're told we have to control our kids, and our kids' behavior is a reflection on us. And so when that kid just grabs that shovel without asking and starts digging, your immediate reaction is, hey, you didn't ask me. We can't just do that, right? And so you can imagine how that leads to a lot of pressure and conditioning for that child to not be themselves and to adapt and adjust. And suddenly these manifestors start to ask for permission and look for validation, which prevents them from starting the magical movements and things that they are supposed to. So that's the manifestor kid. Then the second kind of group I'd like to talk about are projectors. So projectors make up about 20% of the population, and projectors are very much the kind of guides. So if manifestors are here to kind of initiate and be the spark, projectors are here to refine and guide and optimize. And so projectors actually have a much more moderate ebb and flow of energy. And they are really most effective when they can focus on one thing at a time and dedicate themselves to something for a short, intense burst of time. And then they too need to kind of rest and reset. So projector kids are the types of kids that, one, are going to be fascinated by how things work and kind of optimizing or understanding how to kind of improve or better something. Like, they love fixing and solving things. And they're going to be able to kind of sit quietly working on a puzzle or with some type of toy for that, like, kind of short, intense burst of time. And then they're going to need to kind of rest their mind and sit back and almost observe, right? There's a lot of power for a projector in just being free to observe instead of there being pressure to actually create or output. Projectors sometimes, though, because they have that ability to see how something can be done better, they can come across as quite critical. And if they tend to kind of share their insights and observations without being invited to do so, it can come across as a little bit of a, like, know-it-all, right? Or again, overly, like, a glass half empty kind of thing. And so for projectors, the name of the game is really learning to wait for that invitation, to wait to be recognized, to wait to be acknowledged, to wait for someone to kind of celebrate your ability to problem solve or your natural gifts that all projectors have, and kind of invite you to share those. So if you have a projector child, really being mindful that, like, all they want is for you to see them clearly and for you to invite them to share their gifts. They're not here to go and initiate in the same way that manifestors are. They're really here to be a little bit more passive until you invite them in. And they also are going to need a lot of alone time. And they are going to do best when they have your one-on-one attention, as opposed to, you know, bigger groups of people, which can be quite overwhelming for that projector initially. Now we get to the largest cohort of people, and that is the generators and the manifesting generators. So these two groups together make up about 70% of the population. And that's because this group's energy is very consistent. These generators and manifesting generators are here to almost act as, like, the motors of society, in the sense that they have this ability to apply themselves in a very consistent, persistent way to things. And they don't have that ebb and flow as much as the manifestors and the projectors do. Now, for generators and manifesting generators, it's really important that they are applying that energy to things that excite them and bring them joy. So for them, it's a really kind of physical response that they will feel towards something. Even, you know, if you have a generator, a manifesting generator child, pay attention to what their body does when they are loving what they're doing, right? Whether it's they're eating their favorite food and you hear them just going, like they, like, start making noises, or my son, when he's doing something that he really enjoys, he starts to rock back and forth, right? Or he does this, like, happy dance. It's a very physical response. And so as a parent, pay attention to where, what gives your kids that physical response, because that's a clear telltale sign that they're meant to do more of it, that it's a great use of their time and energy. When generators and manifesting generators are forced to do things that don't really excite them or light them up, it'll be quite draining. But because they have that consistent source of energy, they don't necessarily hit that point of burnout like a manifestor or a projector will. And so what's really hard is that most adult generators and manifesting generators have been conditioned to basically be these martyrs that say yes to every request, do a lot of stuff for other people because it makes that other person happy, and they happen to have the energetic capacity to do so. But they've lost touch with what actually brings them joy and what excites them. And so they're operating at, you know, 50 to 60% of their full potential. And that full potential can only be accessed when they prioritize their own joy and excitement. And so as a parent of a young generator and manifesting generator, helping them recognize that, helping them realize that, like, they don't have to say yes to doing what other people want them to do. And it is completely valid to prioritize their own needs and what brings them joy, even over yours as the parent, right? Like, that's a really important lesson for them to learn. The slight difference between these two types is that whereas generators can be a little bit more focused in their application of energy, manifesting generators are non-linear beings in that they have a little bit of that manifestor erratic nature where they will move very quickly from one interest to the other. And they love a variety of things. And they're like, I mean, with my son, for example, I've learned to never clean up after him because I think he's done. And I then, as the generator mom, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start to organize and clean this up. But actually, he wants to circle back to it an hour from now after he's like pulled out another five other toys, right? And when we're on an airplane, I have to have, like, you know, 20 different activities versus if I had a projector child, maybe I just need three and he could play with each for an hour. My son needs to just like constantly cycle through things. So that's the generator, manifesting generator. And then the very last type is a reflector. And reflectors are, just as the name suggests, they're like these magical unicorn snowflake kids that are highly sensitive and really designed to reflect the health and well-being of whatever community that they are a part of. So they are the product of their environment in many ways. And a reflector is like a mirror. So if you have a reflector in your family, looking at them and how they're doing and how they're showing up and what their health and well-being is like is going to tell you what's going on with the rest of the family, because they are constantly absorbing everyone else's energy, emotions, fears, right? All of that. And in a way, they are then reflecting that back to you. And so for reflector children, it's really important for them to understand how to manage this hypersensitivity, because it can really throw you, right? Because you can be feeling totally good, and then one person walks into the room, right? Or one kid comes to class that day and is dealing with something really, really difficult, and you don't even know what it is, but you feel in your body suddenly this grief or pain or anger that isn't yours, and yet you're still experiencing it as if it is. And so that's something that is a lot for a little child to handle. And you might notice that reflectors do get sick more frequently. They do feel overwhelmed a lot, depending, and they're very sensitive to environment, people, as well as just like the energy and the vibe of the setting that they're in. So as a parent, the best thing that you can do with a reflector child is teach them that a lot of the time what they're experiencing isn't actually theirs to carry, right? And also be super mindful of like, what are the environments and people that they seem most at peace around, and how can I make sure we're spending most of our time in those types of places and avoiding the people that seem to like have the greatest triggering effect on them.
Whew, that was a lot. Thank you so much. No, in a good way. In a good way, because I hope people listening are reflecting on their own lives and take from what you shared and apply it. And hopefully they already know their body type or their energy type. Yeah. And, or have their design, right? They know their design. And if you don't, I'm going to put a link in the show notes where you can find that information out, and then come back and listen to this again and find your children's human design and, listen to this like two or three times if you have to really take in what was shared, because I think it's so important. The stuff that we experience, I can't even imagine being a reflector. Like, that just sounds so exhausting to me. Do I even know a reflector? I don't even know if I know a reflector.
I mean, they're only 1% of the population. Right? So it's possible that you don't.
Well, and manifestors are like 9%, right? Mm-hmm. So we're kind of a rare breed too, in a way. But no, thank you so much for all of that. It's just good for me. I've heard it, I've heard it in other ways, and it's when you hear it a different way, it's just, yeah, I really love that. So thank you so much. I want to go back to like your story though, and like how this all kind of played out. Like, so with your relationship, so when you first met your now husband, did you know his human design? Were you into human design? Not at that time. Not yet.
Nope. Not yet at all.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's been, I often credit human design to, you know, the fact that we still have a thriving relationship now 16 years later, because neither of us were really planning on meeting our person that young. We still wanted to do a lot and travel a lot. And we, especially him, needed a lot of freedom to explore all those things before we quote unquote settled down. So we didn't get married until 10 years after we met. And then we took another few years before we had our son. But learning about his human design allowed me to be such a better partner for him, because up until I learned about it, there were certain aspects. So he's a projector, right? Which, like I said, projectors need a lot of alone time. And I remember so distinctly, even in college too, we'd have these like free afternoons, and my immediate response was, great, let's go do something. And you could tell he did not want to. Sometimes he kind of appeased me, but most of the time he's like, I just kind of want to be by myself in my room. And I could not understand. And I would take it personally. So I would assume, oh, he's not into me, or he's not into me as much as I'm into him. Right. And when I discovered that he was a projector, it all made so much sense. And I could finally stop taking those things personally, because he would just sit in his room and watch a movie. And in my head, I'm like, well, I could just watch the movie with you, but it wouldn't have been the same. Like, he really needed to be in his own aura, his own energy, in order to fully recharge from, you know, the just busyness of being in college and playing a sport and, you know, the whole social scene and life. Like, that was really important for him. And I wish I knew in college, because it would have saved me a lot of anxiety. But especially now, also, you know, becoming parents and understanding, for example, that for a projector, starting his day slowly is really, really supportive and allows him to show up more fully as a dad and as a partner later on in the day. Whereas for me, as a generator, I kind of wake up and immediately, this is not true for all generators, but for me, I kind of have this like, you know, steady current of energy that I can use as a parent. And so I take the majority of the morning shifts, because I know that then later on, if I need him around dinner time, my husband's going to be present and ready to go. But if I, or on the mornings where he does have to do the, you know, 6:30, 7 a.m. wake up, by the end of the day, he's shot and he needs more of that solo time to recharge. So it's just learning to understand that, and then not comparing his energetic output, right, to mine, because they're incomparable and one isn't better than the other. It's just different. So when he has a solo weekend, for example, my husband knows that he can only be on, quote unquote, as that parent for 2-3 hours at a time comfortably before it starts to become really, really difficult. So he will in advance make sure he's got his parents that are going to take a little window, that we've got a babysitter that might take a little window, to set him up for success. Whereas I am much better able to just kind of grind it out for 48 hours, right? And for me, the more important thing is making sure that throughout the day, I get to do things that excite me and bring me joy, and that I get to take my son to like my favorite coffee shop, or treat us to, you know, a delicious dinner or get an hour at my like favorite Pilates studio. Like that's much more important to me and is not at all significant to my husband in that case.
I love that. What's interesting is that I learned that my husband and I, he's like the male version of me. We're both.
Is he also a manifester?
4-6 emotional manifester. Exactly.
Wow.
He and I both.
What are the odds? Like that.
Like what are the odds? Right?
I know.
20 years. But just knowing the things that I know, like I've been kind of digging into the gates of love, which really has, I mean, we have a lot of these, what are they called? The gates of compromise.
Yeah. Compromise channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have like 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so just learning about those has been really eye-opening, and like just how he, like, you know, he's such a giver of love and affection and like being the provider. And when he's not feeling like he's getting something in getting that in return, like the equivalent of that, like he can feel a little bit of
taken for granted and get anger.
Exactly. Yeah. So as a manifestor, anger is not our self theme. So when I feel myself getting angry about anything, it's, what's going on?
And that's another really good one to be aware of in partners and in kids too, right? Because each of those energy types I just described has, you know, what Victoria just mentioned, this not self theme, which is basically what comes up when you are compromising on your natural energetic pattern. And so for manifestors, that's anger. So if you notice your child getting angry, your manifestor kid, it's usually just a sign that they're being limited in some way. They're being forced to not listen to that like urge that they want to follow or pursue. And for a generator or manifesting generator, it's going to be frustration. So if you notice your child getting frustrated, right, or feeling more of that like stuck, that frustrated energy, that's usually a sign that they're being forced to do too many things that don't light them up, that aren't exciting to them. And as a projector, the not self is bitterness, or a lot of the times it comes across as resentment. So if a projector is, you know, not being invited or recognized enough, or they feel like they're pushing themselves too hard beyond their energetic capacity, right? They're not given enough time to rest and recharge. They'll start to get resentful about that. And then reflectors, the final one is disappointment. So if you notice that a reflector is like constantly disappointed in themselves or in the world, and they just feel let down, that's a sign that they probably aren't in the right environment. Right? That they're not surrounded by the right people, and that they are not able to, or that they have absorbed far too much of everyone else's energy and don't really know what to do with it or can't figure out how to let it go.
So how has this information helped you specifically? Because I'm sure you've had more grieving experiences since your mom's passing, but how has the losses you've experienced since then been in how do I want to word this? I think you know what I'm getting at, but like,
how have I used human design to support that process?
Yes. And where would one look at their human design to see where are some areas for people to look in at their human design when it comes to grief?
So it's helped me in so many ways, and 3 come to mind immediately. The first being the energy type piece. And this is mostly around how to support yourself best as you go through that grief. So again, for me, I know I'm going to feel most like myself and most energized when I am creating enough space to do things that light me up and bring me joy. So even in the face of, especially in the face of grief, that becomes that much more important. Right? To carve out that time for myself. And for projectors, for example, rest becomes that much more important, that you're not pushing yourself. And for manifestors, like honoring your energetic ups and downs and your desires in that moment and letting go of what other people think becomes that much more important when you're going through grief. So that's one. The other piece is that emotional center that we already talked about. So I know that for me, it's really important for me to allow myself to feel my feelings and to ride that wave. And I can now almost enjoy that process in a weird way, right? Because I know that wave is going to crash at some moment. Usually there's this wave-like pattern to emotions, which I think also very much mirrors grief, right? Where it kind of like comes rolling in, it builds, it builds, it builds. Then there's this crescendo moment where you're feeling so much. And then eventually that wave crashes and you kind of find yourself bobbing at the surface in more of kind of that cool, calm, collected space. And you're still feeling, but the charge has disappeared. Like it's less overwhelming. And so understanding that pattern has helped me a lot because I can kind of gauge where I am on that wave. And I can know, okay, it's going to crash soon. And that's the place where I really want to sit and reflect for a little bit and be like, okay, what is this feeling trying to tell me? Because I know for me that the feelings are always trying to communicate something. So that's another piece. I allow myself to really sit with things more as opposed to feel like I need to act or do something to resolve it. I know that that wave pattern is going to continue to exist. Whereas if you are an open emotional or a non-emotional, so that emotional center is what we call undefined, and you know you're more sensitive to other people, if you're going through grief, you might actually want to isolate a little bit more. Right? You might actually want to remove yourself from the other grieving people because it will almost overshadow your ability to kind of sit with your own grief because you're going to be feeling everyone else's and then feel pressure, right, to respond to that or do something about their grief. So that's a really helpful insight. And then the last thing that I'd say is looking at profile. So there's this element in human design called profile, which speaks more to your personality and really to the how, to like how you approach things in life. And there's 12 different profiles, and each profile consists of two numbers. And each of the numbers in the profile represent like an archetype that lives within you. So when Victoria was just saying, we're both 4-6 manifestors, the 4-6 is her profile and her husband's profile. Each of these numbers also can tell you a little bit about like how you might process grief most effectively. So really quickly, the number one is known as the investigator archetype. So these are people who will want to know as much as possible and get into the research and feel most comfortable when they have all the data points and all the information, right? So for example, when it comes to grieving, these might be the people, if let's say it has something to do with an illness, their immediate thing is, I'm going to research everything that like possible about this particular illness and like what the statistics are saying. Or they might delve into, I want to understand like the science behind grief and like what the different stages are, right? Like that's very much the like one line. The number two line is the naturally gifted person. It's the person who kind of picks things up very easily, intuitively, and naturally, doesn't really need to study anything, but just knows in their bones certain things to be true or how to do certain things. Twos benefit a lot from alone time and having the ability to kind of in a safe cocoon-like space do their thing. So in times of grief, a two might feel like they just want to like close the door to their bedroom and cry or journal or whatever that might look like, but they might feel this need to want to do it themselves and to really get like fully absorbed in their own process and whatever feels good to them at that moment in time to move through it. Threes are like the experimenters. Threes are the people who learn best through trial and error and throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. So if you're a three and you're grieving, you might try all the different things. You might try a certain form of therapy. You might try journaling. You might try painting. You might try meditation, right? And you just keep kind of like whatever you hear about or whatever sparks your interest, I encourage you to experiment with it and see if it supports you and feels supportive. Because the only way you're going to figure out what is going to help you through this grieving process is by just trying a lot of different things. And you won't know just from hearing it from a friend, right? And just because it worked for the friend doesn't mean it's going to work for you. You've got to try it for yourself. Then there's the four. Fours are the relationship-oriented people who are very sensitive to the quality of the relationships in their life. They're very gifted connectors. They're also people who, you know, get equally as lit up by social interactions as they can get exhausted by them. But it's this like love-hate relationship, right? As you probably know, Victoria. So for fours, though, the support system is really, really key when it comes to grief, making sure that you feel like you have those individuals in your life that you can vent to, that are going to show up for you, and being very aware of like, what are the resources that I need, human resources as well as otherwise, in order to feel most supported during this time. Five is the problem solver. Five are the people who are just immediately go into like fix it mode. Fives are also very much like they feel a lot of responsibility. I have a five. So you can see how, right, as a kid, my immediate reaction was like, I'm going to go into problem solving. I'm going to be the person that everyone in my family can rely on. And so that means shutting down my own emotions. So fives oftentimes have a lot going on below the surface that no one can see because they feel like they have to uphold a certain level of kind of responsibility, and they really hate disappointing other people, and they don't like feeling vulnerable, even though the vulnerability is actually the key for them. So for fives, finding even the one person or the one setting in which you can truly be vulnerable and allow that hard outer shell to kind of like disappear for a moment in times of grief is essential, because in most situations, you're going to want to be that like problem solver, and you can't always be that. You need to also take care of yourself and your own needs in that sense. And then the last number, the six, is the role model. And sixes are people who are wise beyond their years. They're kind of these like natural advisors, very fair, very objective, and very reflective too. So for sixes, as you're going through grief, a lot of it will be reflecting on and observing kind of what's coming up for me, what might that mean, in almost like a bird's eye view type of way, right? Like very much kind of feeling almost like a little bit removed, as if you're looking at yourself going through that grieving process. But sixes might also, again, feel pressure to play that role model part, and therefore also not get like pulled under by their grief. And so it's important for sixes to kind of still lean into that other number that they have, because you always have two numbers, in order to help them actually do that work, because they're very quickly going to want to go into, okay, what have I learned from this grief, and how can I now use that to support other people through this same process?
This has been gold, just absolute gold. How are you on time?
I'm good. I probably should start wrapping it up though soon.
Okay. Oh, because I wanted to talk more about your story a little bit more, but I want to ask though quickly. So knowing what you know now, like what gives you the most hope for the future? And also what is it about human design that you feel you can bring into, or how, what would you suggest for grievers to, that's not even a good question either. I want to ask like a million questions right now because I'm pressure root center.
Mm-hmm. Just let it sit. You'll get there.
Okay. What would you like to share? What do you think? I'm going to put it in your hands because you know human design far beyond my capabilities. So what do you think is most important for people to know that you haven't shared already? And also the most important lesson and things that you have gotten from human design that you're taking forward and that you're utilizing in your life?
I think I'll keep it as simple and succinct as possible and say that the whole system of human design is built on this premise of differentiation, the science of differentiation. Like each of us is designed intentionally to be unique and different in terms of the way our energy works. And that by definition means that everyone is designed to grieve differently, right? Like there is no one size fits all approach to grief. And so I really encourage you to, you know, find some type of solace in that too, right? That like, just because, you know, something worked for someone else in your life and it's not working for you, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that you haven't found the most aligned way for you to process that grief. And a lot of it comes down to understanding yourself on this like whole nother level and trusting yourself. And I think that, again, we live in a world that puts so much pressure on us to be a certain way, to operate in a certain way. There's a very clear right and wrong way to do things. And as a result, we compromise on or shut down and ignore those inner voices that as kids are much louder and then as adults kind of fade away into the background. And I hope that the grieving process serves as a way for you to start to get to know those voices again, to start to hear them more clearly, to start to kind of shut out all the shoulds that you're feeling pressure to live up to from the outside world and really tune into what do I need? What does my body want, right? How am I responding to whatever it is that you might be facing in that moment in time? Because if you can allow the grieving process to do that, you will come out on the other end so much stronger and more aligned and in tune with who you are really here to be. And if nothing else, right, that the grieving process is such a powerful way of just like shedding more layers and coming closer to like that authentic self. So accept and embrace this idea that we're all here to do things differently and use this as an opportunity to kind of get to know what that unique recipe looks like for you.
I actually have a program. It's called Do Grief Differently.
There you go. I didn't even know that. See?
But it is a framework and it is evidence-based. And so as I'm listening to you, I'm like, I've seen this work for so many different types of people, so many different personalities, of course, so many different energy types, right? And so it is like, it is very much about digging into the emotional climate within you. And it's individualized because it's a framework that you apply to your grief, yeah, not to your neighbor's grief, your mother's grief, your sister's grief, your brother's grief, whatever. And I think that's why it works, because it's individualized to you and your experience. And I think that's why it works. But thank you so much. I've absolutely loved this. I seriously have loved this. I geek out on human design. I'm still in my own exploration and experiment too, of course. And I think that'll be a forever ongoing thing. I am a huge proponent of anything that helps us understand ourselves better, because I think the most important thing that we can give ourselves is compassion and grace. Not like a grace as a pass, but a grace of just self-grace for being able to honor yourself, who you are in the moment, and giving yourself that compassion that maybe you didn't receive growing up because of who you were. I love human design for that reason. Clearly, it's been a gift for you in your grief experience. And I would love to have you back sometime again, because this was so good. This was really so good. So I really appreciate your time today. And so much thanks to you for sharing.
Thank
your
you
knowledge.
For having
like,
me.
I'm so impressed. Like you just like didn't have to look up notes. Like you knew it like the back of your hand. So I'm very impressed by that and impressed by you and everything that you shared today. Anything else you would like to share?
No, I think that's it. And just thank you for the work that you do too. I mean, there's a special place in my heart for grief and finding frameworks and support to, you know, guide people through those moments in life. So thank you for the work you're doing as well.
So how can people work with you? Because you have two websites, right? You have two different websites.
I have two different websites. One of them is more just my personal website where you can book sessions, one-on-one sessions. Although I will say, because I'm about to have a baby, those sessions will pick up again in May or June, I would say. So that's alexandracole.com. For all my other offerings and products, it's thrivingbydesign.com. And that's where you can find the wellness report or the well-being report that Victoria was talking about at the beginning, which takes your chart and translates it essentially into your optimal recipe for well-being. And we look at everything from rest and nourishment to mental and emotional health. So a lot of the things that we touched on today will come through in that report, but it's very specific to well-being. It's not like a broad overview of your chart, let's say. I also on that website have something called Raised by Design, which is for parents who want to, at a very high level, understand their child's design. It's like a 20-page summary of just kind of the like main points that you need to understand with very tactical strategies for how to actually support your child in that way, in the most aligned way.
And that's specific to your child's chart, correct?
Yes, that's specific to your child's chart.
Gold, yeah. People. Yeah. That's gold.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of other also free resources and different things on Thriving by Design, but those are two reports that I, you know, are worth calling out specifically.
How about the Purpose Playbook?
The Purpose Playbook is my book that I wrote, you know, after that experience of just kind of leaving the corporate world and reflecting on, you know, what allowed me to do that with so much conviction and confidence. It doesn't actually even talk about human design. It's very much like a framework for helping people pinpoint like what their purpose and mission is in this life and how to go pursue it in a aligned way. So I wrote that book back in 2019, came out in 2020. So if you're looking for more of a kind of step-by-step process to articulate and live out your purpose in life, that's a really helpful resource too.
I bet you could come up with a second book, knowing what you know.
Maybe.
Now.
Maybe. I know. It's just such a big endeavor. And I've been, you know, my biggest projects these past few years have been kids. So once I get past that, who knows, the next will be a book.
Quickly, the few things that from the ebook, I just want to share from the Well by Design. For me, it was surprising things were exercise in the afternoon to cleanse my system, which I found I naturally tend to do that sometimes. I was very surprised to learn that I don't need much food to, I don't need as much food to feel nourished, which I was really surprising to me because I just went through a coaching thing and, you know, a lot of it was like macros and I'd eat so much food. So much food and I had so much energy, but you know, I could tell something was waning at some, you know, at a certain point, you know, when it came to my digestion and stuff. So that was interesting. And not surprising is that I'm prone to overthinking, which, but it's so good too. So I really highly recommend that people check that out. And I'll put all of the information in the show notes, but I just wanted to quickly share that. Yes. The Well by Design report is excellent. The Raised by Design, get your hands on it because, you know, your children are a product of your parenting, right?
100%. Yeah, in a way. They're actually very, like, they have their own makeup, but as a parent, you can either support or negate it. And that's the key, right? Like, we want to actually, as parents, encourage them to become more of themselves as opposed to more of what the world expects them or wants them to be.
Yeah, no pressure.
I know, right?
But I think when it comes to grief, right, this is why this information is so important and why I wanted to have you on. So thank you. Thank you again. Thank you again for being here.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And remember, when you unleash your heart, you unleash your life. Much love. From my heart to yours, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please share it because sharing is caring. And until next time, give and share compassion by being a heart with ears. And if you're hurting, know that what you're feeling is normal and natural. Much love, my friend.